Prime Minister Gough Whitlam was visiting London in 1973 when he was asked by the Labour peer Lord Chalfont about his religious beliefs. According to the Sydney Morning Herald's religion editor Alan Gill, Whitlam replied, "I'm not a Christian, but a fellow traveller with Christianity." As Australia marks the death this week of the Labour Party legend, it's time to ask what he meant by the term, and also whether a sharp exchange about religion with the then Queensland Premier may have contributed to his downfall in 1975. Roy Williams is perfectly placed to explain. He's not only the author of In God They Trust, The Religious Beliefs of Australia's Prime Ministers, but his father, Evan, was an advisor and confidant to Gough Whitlam for most of the 1970s. Earlier, I welcomed Roy Williams to the studio.
Pleasure to be here, Andrew, though a sad occasion.
It is. It is Tony Stevens who wrote The Herald and The Age's magnificent obituary begins with that wonderful Gough quote where Gough, who was famously an agnostic, was asked, "Well, what if you're wrong and you did meet God?" And he says, "Well, I'd treat him as an equal." Now, for all the humour that he injected into that comment, he wasn't really ever contemptuous of religion, was he?
No, quite the opposite, quite the opposite. He was, for a start, raised by two devout Baptist parents. Both his father and his mother were from that tradition and were very serious about it in the household. He was sent to Sunday school, accompanied there by his very stern Baptist uncle, and his sister, Frieda, went up to be quite high in the Uniting Church.
Yes, moderator of the New South Wales Synod of the Church.
Indeed, and also a missionary in later life in France. And headmistress of Presbyterian Ladies' College in Croydon. So he came from a very religious family. In one sense, he was really the odd man out in that he said he lost his faith when he was 11 or 12, probably for spurious reasons, in his words.
Mm. And, of course, he had a formidable wife in Margaret, who was a very committed Anglican. She would not have let him be contemptuous of religion, would she?
No, not at all. Margaret was a quiet Anglican in the high Anglican tradition. The thing to understand about Gough is this, Andrew. Apart from Alfred Deakin, no Prime Minister in Australian history knew more about Christianity in terms of doctrine, in terms of church history. He was absolutely steeped in it and fascinated by it all his life. He used to refer to the three books, the complete works of Shakespeare, his own massive and largely unreadable tome, The Whitlam Government, and the Bible.
Yeah. Mm. Now, you mentioned there that he grew up in a Baptist household. Now, of course, we think today of Gough as an upper-middle-class figure, rather patrician. Now, the Baptist Church, for all its many gifts, has not really been thought of as the church of the establishment. And yet, what did that Baptist upbringing give him?
Very much a sense of equality. His father was, by all accounts, an extremely admirable man. He was a Commonwealth Crown Solicitor, deeply respected on both sides of politics and a firm believer in Orthodox Christianity. But at a secular level, the value he imparted was equality. A quality of opportunity, which was Whitlam's keynote of his whole career.
Yes, he may have found, though, the Baptist theology a little strict, because I think when he was a teenager, when he had formally forsaken a belief in God, he still wanted to be confirmed as an Anglican.
That's
why,
right.
Why was that?
Well, he was going to Canberra Grammar at the time. His father, I think, had sent him there in sort of a last-ditch hope that he might be converted, and he was regarded as an insolent student at the state school where he'd been. The other great anecdote from Canberra Grammar is that towards the end of his time there, he actually received the top mark in the divinity exam, 92%. But the headmaster of the school, a canon of the Church of England, awarded the prize to the second place getter on the grounds that the boy actually believes it.
Yes, and the second place getter was himself a remarkable man, Francis James, who became editor of an Anglican newspaper and was briefly detained in China as a spy. I think Gough had to get him out, didn't he, at one point?
I think that's right. It was during his prime ministership that James was over there.
Now, interestingly, Roy, even though Gough had forsworn any belief in the divinity, when he was an Air Force officer, he actually led religious services, almost as a minister.
He did. As a sort of lay minister, he was stationed up in the Northern Territory near the Gove Air Force Base. There was a local missionary, but as I understand it from memory, he was an Aboriginal or a Fijian, and the Air Force wouldn't allow him to conduct the funeral services of servicemen. So Gough was called in. I'm not sure what his credentials were exactly, but he certainly, as I said earlier, was steeped in Christian doctrine, ceremony and tradition, and he did it very well, apparently.
Maybe his credential was that he had this appreciation of the Bible, if not as the story of a divine being, then what did he like the Bible for, its literary qualities or its historical narrative?
Well, that, but not just that. For Gough Whitlam, it was a far deeper knowledge of the place of Christianity in the whole history of Western civilization. He was completely steeped in it. Theology, church history, all denominations. He made a real point when he was member for Werriwa in the 1950s and 60s of reaching out to all the different congregations in his electorate, which in that period, of course, with the wave of post-war immigration, included Catholics from all sorts of traditions in Europe, and indeed other religions as well later on.
Now, we do need to remember that he was a pragmatic prime minister, and there were two areas of policy that really intersected with faith and public life in this country. One was his decision for Labor to adopt a position that favoured state aid to needy private, and that usually meant religious schools. Why was that so important?
The Catholic Church had been campaigning for funding for decades. Menzies sort of started the process, but the Labor Party was split three ways. You had a remnant of bigoted Protestants who didn't want a bar of state aid. The secularists were opposing it for quite different reasons, and of course the Catholic presence within the party. Whitlam realised that this debate was poisonous. It was poisonous for the Labor Party. It was utterly poisonous for the country. And ultimately the justice of the cause, that underfunded Catholic schools needed support and deserved support. And he appointed as his education shadow minister and ultimately minister Kim Beazley Sr., a very devout Anglican, by the way. And together they convinced the churches, or enough of them, that Labor could be trusted on state aid, which was a key point in the 72 victory.
Now, having used one piece of public policy to bring people of faith back to the Labor Party, you do point out that another public policy decision alienated religious voters, and that was a new Family Law Act that introduced the concept of no-fault divorce, which removed the idea that either partner had to show someone was at fault, that the only reason for divorce was irreconcilable difference. Why did this annoy so many people?
The churches were very suspicious of the radicalness of the reform that the Family Law Act represented. I think there'd been a gathering consensus for years that the old fault-based system had to be reformed on both sides of politics. But looking back on it, it's hard to argue that the Family Law Act did represent a massive shift, and the divorce rate since has skyrocketed. And Christians of all denominations have made that observation. And I personally think it's a fair one. It's interesting that at the time when that went through the Parliament, there was a minority on both sides of the House. Paul Keating was one on the Labor side, and John Howard was another on the Liberal side, who actually were in favour of a somewhat less radical reform that would have brought in no-fault divorce, but a longer period of separation as a prerequisite to it.
Now, just to close the loop, even though I said that Gough Whitlam was not contemptuous of religion, he did have some tense moments with the then Queensland Premier, Joe Biocchi-Peterson, who was a pretty devout conservative Lutheran. Now, he famously called Joe a Bible-bashing bastard quite late in the piece in 1975. But earlier in, I think, late 74, he had mocked Joe Biocchi-Peterson. He'd said that he was, quote, an ostentatiously religious man who has taken a vow of poverty for Queensland. Was this Whitlam really being contemptuous of Joe Biocchi-Peterson's faith, or was there maybe a little sort of that snobbish view that, well, Joe has a more primitive fundamentalist religious position?
Well, there might have been a bit of that in the background. The fundamental problem was that Joe blocked everything within his power that Gough was trying to do. And ultimately, in the end, Jockey Peterson really brought about the downfall of the Whitlam government in a very practical way by appointing to replace a dead Labor senator from Queensland, a senator who would reliably vote with the coalition, a man called Field. That's the only reason why the coalition was able to block supply. Perhaps it's a good example of how, you know, a loose tongue, especially on a touchy subject like religion, can come back to haunt you.
Roy Williams, the author of In God They Trust, The Religious Beliefs of Australia's Prime Ministers, and a Whitlam family friend. And you're with Andrew West on the Religion and Ethics Report.